through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
I could practically feel how, like, super, super excited and happy and elated our own Curtis Rogers was when he sent us, Jake, the other night, a screenshot of a tweet announcing that Larry Scott was out as Pac-12 commissioner.
We did it, everybody.
We did it. We did it.
We made it through. We made it through.
The Jake and Stacy show did it.
We did it.
We didn't.
No,
but
we didn't.
But it's done. And that's the most important thing. And let me tell you what, cause for celebration, Jake. Cause for celebration.
Yes, I would say so. There's really what happened initially was when that happened, I was shocked because I didn't think it was ever going to happen. I thought we were going to be in this purgatory for forever with Larry Scott. And finally, you see the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors and whatever you want to call them at the very top, that they finally woke up and understood that this was the decision that needed to be made. I think it was just a few years too late.
A little bit.
But it finally was made. I got into a deep, dark place of pessimism that I didn't think it was ever going to happen. And then I started to be like, well, you know, Jay, gosh, it's wrong. It's wrong for you to celebrate someone losing their job. But then immediately
after that,
you know, I was singing hallelujah. I was feeling this right now. Just basking it. Basking it, everyone. Larry Scott is no longer the Pac-12 commissioner.
See, Jake, here's the thing. We're excited about it. We're celebrating. And yeah, maybe it sounds bad to make fun of someone, but he's walking away with $40 million.
You know what?
So we played ourselves.
Correct.
Congratulations.
Yes, you know who Larry Scott is? You know who I finally come to the conclusion?
Who?
As you just said that.
Well, who created the greatest heist? I'm trying to think if there's like an American. Like
Bernie Madoff?
Yeah. Who's is he? Did he? Larry just Madoff?
Maybe. Maybe, but he's like the Wicked Witch. He's like the Wicked Witch in Wizard of Oz.
Let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
Oh, my God, shit. You went to a dark place.
Yes.
This is dark.
It is dark, but you know what? It's the reality because, you know, with Larry Scott as the Pac-12 commissioner, what ended up happening was you put the Pac-12, it eroded. It
yes.
decayed slowly. And all the while, Larry Scott got richer and didn't make sacrifices on his end to make this conference better. Oh, no, Stacy. During the entire time, this was about Larry Scott and how he could make out with as much as he possibly could. Didn't care a lick about this conference, didn't care a lick about anybody else, and certainly didn't care about the fan base. Listen to him back in 2018, him talking about what his obligation was to this conference.
My responsibility is to our members. That's the trust and the transparency.
What about the ticket
holders?
What about the people watching the games, the fans? Do you have an obligation to the fans?
My obligation is to our members to uphold the highest level of integrity around our officiating, and when it comes to matters, especially targeting, student-athlete health, and I've got tremendous confidence that our conference is considered a leader in both those areas.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I love, as soon as he said, uphold the integrity of officiating, especially targeting, I swear, fans from multiple schools, most especially Wazoo, did a double take. Wait, what? Big pardon? Big pardon, Larry? Can I hit you with some facts also?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So here is where we stand right now. The Pac-12 has been lagging behind its peers in revenue distribution. We all know this. They distributed, this is going to sound like a lot, but it's not comparatively, $32.2 million per school in the 2018-19 fiscal year. But compare that to $55.6 for the Big Ten. Okay, maybe you aren't going to compete with them, but SEC Network, $44.3. Okay, sure. I mean, ACC, though, right now is really the only conference trailing you in any way in some of that. but some of that's completely understandable. They also have other huge deals and really successful on-field products. Meanwhile, Larry Scott has been the highest paid commissioner, $5.3 million per year. And guess what? The Pac-12 is still paying him for 2022. He's going to basically be a lame duck commissioner, still making that money. He's still fine. The Pac-12 on-field product, meanwhile, has fallen behind the rest of the Power Five. I don't have to tell you guys that, but let's take a trip down memory lane. It's been 24 years since a men's hoop team won the NCAA tournament, and that doesn't even bear down, and that doesn't even mention 2018 when no Pac-12 team got past the first round. It's also been 17 years since a football team has won a national championship. Is Larry Scott responsible for all of that? He had only been commissioner for 11 years. No, he's not. The Pac-12 was in some trouble before he got here. He did not make it better. In fact, after his first couple years, where you can say that that initial $3 billion deal was a great move, and I would say, and many people would agree, the expansion of the conference was a good move. After some of those early moves, it was a mess. And kind of a selfish mess, that's hard to say, that included a lot of questionable decision-making around expenses, particularly. Mm-hmm. In addition to his $5.3 million salary, Jake, and this is what John Canzano of Oregon Live was talking about in his own article, panning Larry Scott, there's this degree of just disregard for the people in the Pac-12. And I know fans are thinking, yeah, tell me about it. But this includes people working for Pac-12 Network, because they laid off nearly 100 people or furloughed them, including their entire Pac-12 Network's digital staff. And he did that without increasing his own pay cut to his $5.3 million salary. That is awful leadership. Awful leadership to let all of those people for your own Pac-12 Network get laid off. And this is supposed to be, I know, part of your big plan, but are you kidding me? $5.3 million, you can't take an additional pay cut?
Yeah, you're one of the things that you came in and sold everybody on was how great your Pac-12 Network was going to be. And you go and diminish your product to the bare bones, to the absolute bare bones, just so that you can keep your salary, that you don't suffer, but everybody else around you is going to. I mean, not only is it bad leadership, Stacey, but it's a whole lot of other things that I can't say right now. I mean, that it is just, it's unbelievable in terms of that. And so I always knew that Larry Scott was full of it, but that example right there that you just gave me is one that the entire time, the selling of this great Pac-12 network, and that's going to be the moneymaker. Well, you just said right then and there that you don't really care about that product when it's all said and done.
Well, and how about headquarters being in downtown San Francisco, spending more there, like five times more there combined than any of the other Power Five conferences? The idea that the money you are spending, I mean, he had the nickname Limo Larry for a reason, that the money you're spending would be better used not just going elsewhere, but maybe your attention could be better served going elsewhere. Your media plan didn't work out. I see where you started with it. I see where you were going with it. A lot of people did at the time. It didn't work out. And I know 2024's fiscal year hasn't hit yet. So, yeah, remains to be seen. Sure, maybe you were onto something and it's all going to hit us then. You sunk this conference in so many other ways. And that starts with your behavior as a leader of the conference. It was, frankly, kind of embarrassing.
Curtis, we've been ragging on Larry Scott.
I know.
Is there anything that we can give a tip of the cap to
expansion.
Larry Scott for?
Okay, yeah, expansion.
Okay.
Getting
Thank
to 12
you,
schools and getting into the markets of Salt Lake City and Denver, that was pretty good. How about the initial $3 billion TV deal that kind of set other conferences in motion to getting the huge TV deals that they eventually got? And the only other thing that I could think of, and it's actually been a really cool thing, I got to witness it in person a few years ago, is moving the Pac-12 tournament to Las Vegas.
Yes.
That is an event, and it is incredible. And if you're a college basketball fan out on the West Coast, I highly suggest you experience that weekend at some point in your sports fandom. But other than that, those things three, that's all I could think of.
The general consensus seems to be Larry Scott was the right guy at the time. When he took over in 2009, in those first couple years, he was the right guy for the job. over the course of 11 years that changed. And exactly when it soured is another question. We're going to have Fox Sports College football insider Bruce Feldman on at noon to talk about that, when that relationship started to sour. I don't know that any of us are saying he's a bad person. I think it was clear to everyone that by the end of his tenure here, he was not the right person for the job anymore. Now, the question then becomes, Jake, well, who is the right person for the job? And most importantly, has Larry Scott caused any kind of irreparable damage to the conference that a new commissioner will not be able to dig themselves out of?
Well, he certainly caused a lot of damage. And the reason why, and you said this before, you listed off some of the, or the lack of accomplishments that this conference has had over the years, right? Just falling back to that, it's been 24 years since a men's hoops team has won the NCAA championship. 2018, not a single Pac-12 team got in. Right,
beyond the first round.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Since it's been 17 since a football team has won a national championship. The reason why I point to Larry Scott in a lot of these issues is the fact that you made this conference a conference that's not desirable. It is not a conference that is viewed as such that it will receive a lot of spotlight. It will receive a lot of notoriety. And it is a place where you can receive a lot of exposure. It's not a desired destination anymore. It's not the way. It's certainly not a desired destination for recruits right now. It's certainly not a desired destination
for
coaches.
I mean,
coaches, assistants, all of that.
Yeah.
And so when you put all of it together, now you've got a conference that, as of right now, to me, it is the weakest conference out of the Power Five schools. It's not even close. And whoever comes in next as the next athletic director is going to have to really change the view and the landscape and the power of their conference. And that's going to be an incredible challenge. That'll be an uphill battle.
Curtis, you are not only an alum of a Pac-12 school, Bear Down, but also a huge, huge, huge college hoops fan and someone who is incredibly pessimistic.
Yes.
Where is your optimism level that the Pac-12 can make the right decision for the next commissioner?
I don't think it can get any worse than
that's a good
than
way
how
to look at
been.
It. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Literally anybody could do better than what Larry Scott has done. I do have a little bit of optimism towards it, but just having been a battered Pac-12 fan over the last decade,
yes.
It's hard to think positively about the future when it's been so bleak over the last, 10, 15 years under Larry Scott. But you get the biggest thing holding you back out of the equation now. Something's got to break the Pac-12's way. Something has to now, because the one person that was keeping you from getting to where this conference needed to go, they're no longer there.
Yeah, very true. And there have been a few names that have been linked to the Pac-12 as of right now, mm-hmm. in terms of potentially being commissioners. Curtis, who are the other names outside of Oliver Luck? That's the one name that really stands out to me, Oliver Luck being a very clear choice, not just because it's a name that's very recognizable from his time with West Virginia or his time with the XFL, but I think Oliver Luck has all of the qualities as a commissioner to be very, very good and bring the right type of leadership that this conference desperately needs.
Yeah, Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, he's got a good list on his Twitter account, at ESPN Rittenberg. He's got some candidates that he thinks could be in the running. Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, somebody who's very well connected in the NCAA. Brock Heward mentioned him earlier today on Blue 42. He also said that if Smith does come to the Pac-12, that could have some reverberations here in the conference, because Pat Chun automatically kind of becomes a candidate for that opening. He's got Stanford AD Bernard Muir. Alabama Athletic Director Greg Byrne, who I've got some history with.
I'm interested.
He was Arizona's Athletic Director while I was a student there. I've met him a couple of times. He's a very nice guy. And then ASU's Athletic Director Ray Anderson also could make a push. Anderson is currently in charge there. He hired Herm Edwards a few years ago as their head coach. So I think all of those candidates are good. I mean, they're certainly better than what Larry Scott has been, because we know what Scott did to the conference. I wouldn't be opposed to any of those guys eventually getting the job of Pac-12 commissioner. Maybe there's people out there that aren't on this list that are in the running as well.
Again, Bruce Feldman will join us coming up at noon to talk a bit more about this. So we'll revisit it all day and certainly be asking him questions about Larry Scott, where this team moves forward, and also about UW's now vacant DC position, what they do there. So that will be coming up starting at noon. Before that, it's 11:15, which means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Question one, Jerry DePoto. He was on with Danny and Gallant this morning. Also, the Mariners, they've been doing their big blowout bash here with all sorts of media availability. A lot of cool stuff going on. But there's been plenty of deserved hype surrounding the next wave of Mariners prospects. The Julios, the Kelnicks, all those guys. But who already on the Major League roster are you most excited to watch in a full 2021 season?
For me, man, this is tough. But from a positional player standpoint, I think Kyle Lewis is one that everybody's going to be pointing to see if he can have that same type of season for an entire length, right? Not just 60 games. But the name and the guy that I will be watching very, very closely is going to be Evan White. Evan White is truly the Mariners' first addition to this roster from their farm system, the one that they identified that was ready now. He already went out there and showed that he can be a great player in terms of using his glove and being a gold glover, but can he do it at the plate? He's got a tremendous skill set. He has got tremendous power, but can he put it together at the plate? And if he can do that, I will feel extremely, extremely confident about where the Mariners are heading in their future.
I'm interested in the rest of that young core too. Kyle Lewis, J.P. Crawford being two of those guys. Justice Sheffield, another. Also, I'm personally interested to see what Mitch Haniger looks like. I mean, we kept expecting him to return for a while, ended up missing the entire season, and he kind of fell to the back burner while we were talking about these young guys, but I'm very curious to see what he looks like in his return.
Number two.
Jeremy Fowler yesterday told us he expects Seattle's offensive coordinator hire to come outside of the organization. So does that make you more or less nervous about who they choose to hire?
No, I'm actually more excited about this. I'm actually more excited to know that it is going to be a different thought process. Now, that's not a shot at Dave Canales, because I think Dave Canales is a very, very smart guy. I think he's a really good guy. He has a really good relationship with Russ. I think it could be a good partnership there, and I hope he remains on the staff here in Seattle, particularly at the position that he currently holds. But I do think that there needs to be a fresh pair of eyes on this situation and how to make this offense better, how to make it more unique, how to keep that serve both sides, serve Pete Carroll's desire for balance throughout the entire season, and also serve Russell Wilson in the sense of how can he make that guy better and play at the level that he is fully capable of doing all season long throughout the playoffs, and having an offense that remains balanced but aggressive. And what I mean by aggressive, I don't mean taking shots down the field. I mean aggressive in your approach, aggressive in your tempo, aggressive in your style of play calling, and how you are able to get your playmakers the ball in space in a variety of different ways. That's what I'm hoping this hire from the outside really can bring to the table. And I'm encouraged by the fact that Jeremy Fowler also said that he doesn't believe that they're anywhere close to narrowing down those lists of guys. Because if we're just going off of what's been announced to the public,
not excited about many.
Not excited about a whole lot of these guys. But I do believe that there are probably people that they are interviewing that we don't know about, or that they're trying to keep on the hush for good reason. There's a lot of offensive coordinator positions open right now.
Dream candidate on three. Ready? One, two, three. Nathaniel Hackett. Jake.
Yes, Nathaniel Hackett, Pete Carmichael, Alex Van Pelt.
You had too many choices in mind. I can't narrow it down.
I have a lot of choices.
I am excited to hear that they are seriously leaning towards someone from outside the organization. I know that you always want those great kind of rewarding moments for people that have stuck by the team side and worked really hard. But I also think that a diversity of thought and opinion is just as important. And right now, this coaching staff does have a lot of folks that have come up within the organization or have stayed with Pete from back in his USC days. They've created a wonderful culture in Seattle, and that's fantastic. But every culture benefits from great outside opinions, especially in a league that has changed so much since this team was last in a Super Bowl. I love that it seems like some of the most serious consideration is going to outside considerations. I really like that news.
Number three.
Who is the most underrated free agent the Seahawks need to keep for the 2021 season?
Who do they need to keep? I mean, to me, it's very clear that they have to keep Carlos Dunlap. Carlos Dunlap, I don't think that the Seahawks can go through an offseason not having their leading pass rusher on their defensive line truly figured out. You can't rely on Daryl Taylor. That, to me, the only reason why I say that's underrated is just simply I think more people are focused on other big contracts. Carlos Dunlap's at the top. But the other one that I would love to see is Benson Mayoa. Benson Mayoa is another one that I would love to see back. I don't know if there's room at this point, but I would love to see him back. You know, him. He was able to get six sacks during the year. He was hurt at different points, and he really didn't have the role that he should have had from the beginning of the season. And when Dunlap arrived, Benson Mayoa finally was able to be in a position, Stacey, where he could truly thrive.
Let me read, just for the people, a list of the free agents, maybe the ones you're going to be having your eye on. Ready? KJ Wright, Greg Olson, Bruce Irvin, Jacob Hollister. These are all unrestricted free agents. Benson Mayoa, who Jake's mentioned as maybe the best kind of underrated candidate, if you can get it done. Carlos Hyde, I expect the team to bring him back. Mike Iupati, expect them to move on from him. Cedric Obwehi, Quentin Dunbar, I would expect them to bring him back, especially if they can't keep Shaquille Griffin. Geno Smith, Nico Thorpe, Ethan Posick, Nick Ballor. That's a Pro Bowler right there. You got a couple other guys here. Philip Dorsett, Pete Carroll has mentioned bringing him back. I think that Chris Carson and both Shaquille Griffin can probably find competitive deals elsewhere, as much of a bummer as it is to see both of those guys leave. They've been great Seahawks the past several years. I don't think KJ Wright is going to be one that they actually get done just because of the value that he's going to both deserve and command. He would be one I would hope would stay. Again, I don't think it's going to get done. I just think he's worth too much money and they have very little cap. He was so great this year. And year after year, since about 2 years ago, people have been so quick to write him off once he turned 30. Oh, he's gonna go downhill. He had two of his best seasons the last year. And even then, I have a hard time seeing that continue at quite the same level of production. Having a leader that's been there before in that locker room, a calming presence, I feel like that is a worthwhile cost. So, again, I don't think it's going to get done. But, man, I would love to have him back. I would love for him to end his career as a Seahawk. It was just be so rewarding. All right. We do not have Mike Salk today. Normally, he joins us at 11:30. Instead, we have a special guest. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us right now is The Groz, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Groz, how are you?
Hi, guys. Great to talk to you as always.
Good, good. Hey, you know, we want to get into a lot of Seahawks talk with you. We've got some stuff about Jamal Adams coming up in about 15 minutes. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to talk to you about Larry Scott. What was your initial reaction to the news last evening?
Hallelujah chorus, I suppose. I think he's been a disaster for years as the Pac-12 commissioner. He just couldn't do anything right, in my opinion, over the last 5 or 6 years. And I think that the Pac-12 is much better off without him.
Groz, what were some of the things that you saw from Larry Scott and his leadership that just really has you feeling that way today?
Sure. The television deal that they signed in 2011 was short-sighted. He could never figure out a way to make officiating work. It was a joke in basketball. It was a joke in football. He did some ridiculous things in spending for for buildings for the Pac-12 network, and then gutted the Pac-12 network. And now, you know, to me, the final straw was when the when all the trouble hit. He did a tremendous amount of layoffs at the Pac-12 network when the pandemic hit, and he accelerated his own bonus. So, I mean, to me, he was a bad guy, and it's good riddance. And don't let the door hit you on your way out.
It's as a alum of a Pac-12 school, fan of Pac-12 school programs, the way that so many of us are locally, obviously. Jake pointed this out. It's hard not to feel like you're just in this mode of despair sometimes. It was feeling for a while like things just couldn't be fixed, or it was just going to go the wrong way for a while. Do you think that the damage he's done is repairable?
Absolutely. You've got, even though he has hurt the brand, you've still got the great names in the brand. You've still got great football programs and basketball programs. You've got and goes beyond that as well. So I definitely don't think the damage is irreparable. I think it's going to take some work to fix it. I'll be curious to see what direction they go in, if they go with an administrator. I can't believe they'll do what they did this time and go with someone who's completely from a different realm and not at least very familiar with television or very familiar with the conference. But no, I don't think the damage is that bad, Stacey. It's too good a brand. It can bounce back fairly quickly with the right leadership. Mm.
And I hope you're right, Gross. I wanted to change gears here to the Mariners. Jerry DePoto, you know, went on and talked to the media the other day, you know, going through pretty extensively where he thought this group was at, and really kind of went to the point of saying, hey, they are really in the long term of their plan right now. They are not looking at this from a short-sighted perspective. This is a continued year of development for their young guys, and hopeful that they can get a new core, a new group of their core young guys in their farm system back up. How did you take some of the words of Jerry DePoto as he was speaking to the media?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, he's got his plan and he's sticking to it. I kind of outlined earlier in the week that I think this is a fairly important year for the Mariners. They're really a distant third in terms of the teams, in terms of attracting fans, in terms of attracting interest in Seattle right now. And if you have another year where you don't do anything, you know, and I understand, you know, those who are really into baseball are going to be into it no matter what, but you're talking about the casual fan here. You've got the Kraken coming in this fall with a lot of fanfare, with a great organization headed by Todd Lewicki. They're going to be very effective at recruiting fans, and if they're good right away, you run the risk of being fourth in terms of interest locally. So my opinion, I don't believe in trading prospects or anything like that, but I do believe in them adding a few free agents and trying to take it a step further this year. I understand what his point is, but another part of his job, and it may not be a big factor this year until halfway through the season based on what he said, another part of a general manager's job is putting people in the stands. I mean, that's just a part of it. And it's not going to happen until you start winning and until you start competing. So I appreciate bringing up the young talent, and I understand what he's driving at. But if it was me, I'd be adding some pitching. I wouldn't be trading prospects yet, but I'd certainly be adding some free agents and spending some money.
I think we're expecting them to add at least to the bullpen, but obviously, I think all of us can say we'd still assume they would be under the radar names or not big stars. Is there a bigger name, particularly a pitcher, you'd actually like to see them sign this year?
If he's still out there, Trevor Bauer would be a guy who I think would be interesting to have a partner with Gonzalez at the top of the rotation. To me, it's more a matter of optics, of adding guys. You know, they may be under the radar guys, but if they're good pitchers, it's gonna definitely add to what their major weakness is, which is pitching. And he has talked about building to it. So we'll see what happens. I mean, he hasn't been very active yet, but he's still got a chance to be. I mean, I wouldn't sit around and figure that, and I don't think they're doing this, that the division is coming back to you, even with George Springer signing elsewhere. The Astros organization is stocked. The Rangers organization is stocked. So it's going to be competitive here. But I'm hopeful that they take a few more steps. And maybe halfway through this year, if their prospects are going well, they do make some moves to move forward. But they got to be careful because, you know, they haven't won in a long time. It's obvious. That's an obvious statement. And they really run the risk of falling behind because I think the Kraken are going to have a very good debut.
Groz, do you take where they at with the, where they are currently at with their prospects in a different light? The Mariners have had top prospects before, and unfortunately have not found the right way to bring them up or to keep them. They end up trading them away. But we have seen our fair share of top prospects that have come up to the big league level and have not made it. You have Julio Rodriguez, who is number three, according to Baseball America's top 100 prospects, and you have Jared Kelnick at four, Logan Gilbert, Emerson Hancock. They're 35, 57, respectively. But where are you at with that? Are you kind of burned out from the history in years past, or are you more optimistic about this group?
Well, you can't be burned out because of the history, because it wasn't these guys who were putting together the prospects. So I'm not burned out about it in the sense that you're talking about, Jake, just about 20 years of not winning. However, there's two parts to it, obviously. There's finding the prospects, and then there's developing them. And there's no point in having one if you don't have the other. And the Mariners in the past were really lacking in one or the other. And in the most part, it was development. So, you know, this organization gets their chance to develop their prospects. We're seeing some signs of it. I mean, certainly Kyle Lewis, who was Jerry DePoto's first draft pick, you know, steps out as a great player last year. So, you know, as long as they're developing what they're bringing up, there's reason to be hopeful. But it's hard, you know, you really can't compare them to past organizations. It's not their fault. However, the bottom line is if you don't develop your prospects, it's not going to make any difference how many you have.
Curtis asked us a question yesterday that I think we couldn't decide whether we agreed on it. How do you see Mitch Haniger's future with the organization? Do you see him as any Boy. Kind of long-term piece? Long-term being like, I'm talking like 3 to 5 years here.
Sure. I mean, that is such a tough one, Stacey, because, I mean, you know, it's the number one rule. I mean, he had this terrible injury and he can't get healthy from it. You know, he's shown what he can do. And I would think that they would die hard with him. I mean, they would want to give him every opportunity. This year is obviously going to be an important year. If they can keep him and he winds up being a more of a bargain piece because of the injury he suffered, then I'm all for it. But if he's a guy that they move from, I can understand. It's just such a tough story because he really looked like he was coming into his own, and then that injury just terrible has taken a year and a half away from him at this point.
I didn't have my mic on there for a second.
Pro.
I think I'd be able to know my way around these things. Groz, last thing for me, as you look forward to the Pac-12, Larry Scott's no longer here. They have an opportunity to get this right. What is your confidence level that the Pac-12 finds the right person to be at the head of this thing and to get the Conference of Champions back to that?
And this would be based on just reading and following, other opinions up and down the West Coast. They seem to like the search committee that's going after it. I mean, that's a positive. It's a job that's an important one, and they've got some time to get it right. I'm going to go ahead and be optimistic, Jake, and say that I like the group that got making the search, and there's no way their choice can be as damaging as the last one was. So it's going to be a positive.
From the 425, as usual, agree with Groz. Eventually, the Mariners are going to lose the rest of their fans. You can't pinch pennies and lose forever. Groz, listeners, as always, love listening to you. We love listening to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, guys. I want to just throw a quick mention out. Sad news about Ted Thompson, who passed with the Packers. He was such an important part of this organization in Seattle when he came in 2005 with Mike Holmgren. Really, excuse me, in 1999 with Mike Holmgren. You know, one of the architects of that first Super Bowl team and of course, was John Schneider's mentor. So he's had a huge impact on the Packers, but just a huge impact on the Seahawks as well. So was a great guy, too. So just wanted to acknowledge his passing today.
Well said, Groz. Our prayers with his family too right now. That was hard news. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
All right, it's the most important decision John Schneider has to make this offseason, and he'll need to do it soon. That's next. Did that just add to my controversial flavor take? I already
Hold
said
on,
I
sorry.
Don't like
I'm,
oh yeah
I'm
sorry I'll give you a moment
I'm
I'll give you a moment there
this.
You go
Curtis laid down the beats. So
yes. Jake was eating an orange during the break. I don't know if anyone else is like me. I don't like orange flavored things per se. It's just not my first choice. My first choice fruit wise would be strawberry. That's if we're doing we don't have to do a fruit draft right now. If we were, I guarantee you the vast majority of listeners are in agreement with me, strawberry would be number one. Something like mango, maybe in there.
I do like strawberry, so I'm not going to disagree with you, but I definitely...
But I love the smell of orange.
Okay, but I don't... I just find that very odd, that you don't like the flavor of orange, yeah, but you like the smell of it.
It's not as bad as banana flavor. Like, banana-flavored Laffy Taffy is disgusting.
Well, I agree with you there. That's a high popular opinion.
I don't think this one's as unpopular as my opinion that spaghetti is overrated. Oof. That one made me some enemies.
Yeah, you're on an island on
that one.
I
understand.
And I bet you you're probably on a unique island talking about orange and not liking orange flavor. See, you're already getting, why is Stacey even on the show? Orange Starbursts are way better.
Than pink Starbursts? Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Get out of here. Come on.
They're not better than pink Starburst or red Starburst for that matter, but it is a very, very good flavor.
Now, I did not say anything about what watermelon or mango. Two people saying, what about this? Garlic bread? Of course I like garlic bread. Stacey lost all credibility with the carrot cake argument. Carrot cake's delicious. Look, I'm moving on. I'm done having fights with people who don't understand great flavors. Then my opinions are correct here, and no one else's.
Yeah.
Fine, I'll become an enemy on the show. I'll become the show villain. Fine.
Who says you weren't already spouting out
that's
takes
fine.
Like that?
That's fine. I'm fine with that, food villain.
I don't think she is fine with that.
Whatever. Look.
It's grating away at her.
John Schneider's most important decision he's going to have to make, Jake, is a little bit complicated. I'll tell you why. We know the Seahawks are going to extend Jamal Adams. It's the same reason we knew the Rams were going to extend Jalen Ramsey. The same reason the Bears quickly extended Khalil Mack. You do not give up two first-round picks, Jake, for someone who isn't going to be there long-term, which is why when it comes to this important decision, the decision Schneider has to make, it's not whether they're going to do it, but when they are going to do it and what negotiations will look like. And coming up in about an hour, you've got some advice, some insight into these negotiations. Before we do get to that, though, what is the most important thing when it comes to getting this deal done? You've worked closely with people who have done it. You've gone through negotiations before. What's the most important thing when it comes to this Jamal Adams deal?
Quite frankly, I mean, with Jamal Adams' contract, this will without question be the most challenging negotiation that John Schneider and the Seahawks have ever had. John Schneider has to get this deal done or this will go down as one of the worst trades ever made. You gave up that much capital. And if you cannot either recoup some of that with Jamal Adams or you cannot sign him, this will be a horrific trade. So as you said before, this is a deal that you have to get done, but this will be the most challenging negotiation for John Schneider and the Seahawks that they have ever had. And you may say, well, wait, Jake, they've had some really intense negotiations before. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had an intense negotiation with Russell Wilson.
They had a deadline with Russell Wilson.
Not too far. They had an intense negotiation with a lot of members of the Legion of Boom, with Marshawn Lynch. They've dealt with some unique contracts. But the reason why this is the hardest, most challenging negotiation is because, in actuality, those contracts really weren't that hard. I mean, we're talking about dollars and cents. We're talking about Russell Wilson saying, I want $35 million per year, when Aaron Rodgers at the time had set the mark at 33.5. So we're talking about $1.5 million in difference. Bobby Wagner, in his contract, was $18 million per year, eclipsing C.J. Mosley at the time, $17 million per year. So they have made big contracts and have done some unique things with those contracts, but they have been within reason of what the market currently asks.
Right, exactly.
Right? So in this one, this is unique and different because Jamal Adams, I think smartly, when it comes to contract negotiations, doesn't want to be held to the standard of where the market says or dictates for what a safety is. You have Jamal Adams here in cut number six saying how he doesn't classify himself as a safety, but rather classifies himself as something else.
Well, I classify myself as a playmaker. You know what I mean? I can play anything you need me to do. Any position really. And, you know, I don't really classify myself just as a safety. You know, I classify myself as a defensive weapon. You know what I mean? And so I'm just going to continue to play my ball, continue to do what they ask me to do, continue to learn. And that's all I can do.
So why does Jamal Adams classify himself as a weapon? Well, pretty smart. because if he classified himself as a safety, what does the market say, Stacey? A safety
for strong
makes?
Safeties?
Yes.
12.
12 million.
The best 12 safeties. Or the best strong safeties.
The best safeties in the game. What's the highest safety contract right now?
Free safeties, yearly Buda Baker, total value Landon Collins, both free safeties, 14 to 14.75 million per year.
So for players, here's a couple things of what they go after. They either go after guaranteed money, they go after most money, mm-hmm. most value in a deal.
That would be Collins.
Or they go after what Buda Baker got, which is highest annual salary per yep. year. Players want to be respected in one of those three ways. Okay, that's what they're after in contracts. Well, if you're Jamal Adams and you're viewing yourself as a weapon because you got 9.5 sacks this last year and you're not just a safety, you're used as a safety, you want to make somewhere between $18 to $20 million per year. And if you classify yourself
as
a weapon,
that's almost DN money.
It is
top linebacker money.
But he is truly a generational talent. He is truly one of those guys that kind of goes and beyond, above and beyond the safety position or what is asked of a safety at his position. So that is why his eyes and sights are on a dollar amount that is significantly higher than what the safety market requires. The Seahawks do not do these types of deals. They do not reset the market. They're one of the legitimate franchises in this league that don't do bad deals. So this is why it's going to be extremely challenging for John Schneider to figure out a way that Jamal Adams and the Seahawks can meet in the middle. And if the Seahawks and Jamal Adams can't be on the same page, you're going to have to try and trade Jamal Adams to recoup some of that. That's what's on the line, Stacey. That's why this is so significant and so challenging.
Two things. One, I'm going to just highlight once again those deals that Jake's talking about. Top paid safety. These are two free safeties more traditionally. Top paid safety in terms of total value. That's Landon Collins. He signed a 6-year, $84 million deal. That's about $14 million per year. Highest deal in terms of yearly and also the most recent, Buda Baker, 4-year, 59. So he's making 14.75. The deal that Jake is talking about where you just barely exceed the market, the ones that Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson signed, they exceed the new deal, set the market, but not by a drastic amount, would be something like 15, maybe 15, 5 or 16 million. That would be pushing it. That would be resetting the market per year for safety, though not drastically exceeding it, although that is still a huge deal. Jake is saying that what Jamal Adams, who in his career has 21.5 sacks, broke the sack record for defensive backs last year and for your team, led your team in sacks with, did he finish with 9.5, that he could be looking for something that's a bit closer to 18, 19, maybe even capping out at 20 million. Because for him, he's saying, well, wait a minute, I'm a lot more than a safety.
Yeah.
I'm a lot more than what Buda Baker's been able to do, who's currently making the most per year. You look at their numbers, it's skewed a bit because Adams' two interceptions came before last season, one in each of the two previous seasons. Sacks, 5.5 for Baker, 21.5 for Adams. Same number of fumble recoveries, same number of career interceptions. So, he's got a case to be made, and we'll talk about that coverage grade at 12:45 when Jake lists his advice.
Not only does he have a case to make, he has all the leverage in this situation. Jamal Adams, when you gave up all that capital, you do not do that if you are confident that you are going to sign this player long term. Jamal Adams has a lot of the leverage here, and this is going to be a very, very difficult negotiation for John Schneider.
It's the end of the Larry Scott era in the Pac-12. Let's talk about when this relationship started to sour next with Fox Sports College Football Insider Bruce Feldman. This is Jake and Stacey.